You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, where Christian leaders find strength, wisdom, and encouragement to lead with grace, courage, and purpose. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing nearly 1,000 guests over the last 20 years on various aspects of their leadership activity and journey. So whether you have a leadership title or are simply aiming to use the influence you have wisely, I hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and join us again next week. Whether you want to or not, your role as a leader will include responding to conflict of one form or another. Sometimes the conflict is directed at you, but more typically comes within the group you lead, whether that be members of a church, a charity, or a business, who are not perhaps playing nicely. If you would naturally shrink back from that kind of work, the Apostle Paul believed that apostles were given the ministry of reconciliation, 2 Corinthians 5:18. And by extension, as Christians, we're called to share the peace that Christ can give, but also to be peacemakers within conflict situations. So this week on the Leadership Show, I'm delighted to be welcoming back Alan Cutting. Alan has served as a pastor and planter of churches in the UK and Belgium, and also served with Samaritan's Purse, Tear Fund, Grassroots Trust, and others as a church and community consultant. Most recently, he's been led to work with those suffering both from natural disasters and the aftermath of man-made conflicts, including in Ukraine. And so I'm looking forward to learning about reconciliation from his experience for some of the toughest situations. So, Alan, lovely to welcome you back to the Leadership Show.
Thank you very much, Andy.
So perhaps we could start with you outlining your reconciliation work and why you felt called to this kind of work.
I guess I've always been a man of peace. You know, I'm quite calm and slow to anger in my personality, probably to a fault. But a bit of a backstory as to how I've got to this place. After being a local pastor and church planter in my earlier adulthood, for the last 20 plus years, I've had the huge privilege of traveling internationally, usually working with small churches and vulnerable communities all over the world, and often in their times of greatest need and conflict. So I've been directly involved in responding to global disasters since 1989, and particularly during my 15 years in the employ of Samaritan's Purse. And they would include things like, well, there's a couple of hurricanes in Nicaragua, the 2004 Indian Ocean tsunami in Sri Lanka, and earthquakes in Nepal, and typhoons in the Philippines, and floods in Serbia and Bosnia, etc. And of course, all these natural disasters were hugely traumatic for those impacted. But I think the very worst disasters I responded to in terms of their impact on communities were those which were man-made conflicts. So they included like the sudden and violent displacement, sometimes called ethnic cleansing, of Azerbaijanis from Karabakh in 1990, or the Uzbeks from southern Kyrgyzstan 2011, the Yazidis, the Kurds, the Arabs from their homes during the ISIS occupation, northern Iraq 2015. And then, you know, in the same year, I walked with the Syrian and Afghan refugees and their forced and seemingly endless migration through southern Europe. And now I'm working with up to 300 of the Ukrainians who have fled the war and have come to live in my town. But it's hard not to notice the fear, the shock, the utter helplessness, which is palpable in every disaster, is significantly more intense and tangible in situations of violent conflict. And you know, when they say you could cut the atmosphere or tension with a knife, you know, that's almost literal. You know, it's extraordinary, the heaviness of atmosphere. But, you know, I'm getting a bit old for that frontline action man stuff now. So as we clawed our way out of COVID, I was invited to speak at a reconciliation leadership forum in Croatia. It's called ROM, R-O-M, or Renewing Our Minds, from Romans 12. And it's where millennials from across all the divides in the Balkans, be it the national, political, cultural, ethnic, religious divides, come together for a couple of weeks to listen to one another, to walk together, to learn another way of living and leading. And, you know, these are politicians, educationalists, academics, health practitioners, etc. And it's all modeled on the teachings of Jesus. So, like, seven visits to the Balkans later, plus a visit to Egypt on the 50th, the Jubilee year after the Ramadan or Yom Kippur War in 1973, I find myself specifically directly involved in the world of peace building and reconciliation. I guess, you know, it's never been far away, but now it's in clear focus. So that's the sort of what, that's how I've got there. But I think you asked why as well. I think it's basically the fundamental nature of reconciliation from 2 Corinthians 5. It's not just for the apostles, not just for peace-building professionals or for those who feel called to it, whatever that means. But, you know, if anyone is in Christ, it's all of us. If anyone is in Christ, there's a new creation has come, the old has gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. You know, he's committed to us the message of reconciliation. That's why we're called Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. As Paul says, we implore you, be reconciled to God. So, you know, although God has raised us up with Christ, seated us with him in the heavenly realms and blessed us in the heavenly realms, pretty obvious that for the time being, we're still here on earth. And I guess I feel I found out why. You know, we're merely, simply, only here back on earth, the purpose of being Christ's ambassadors, those who belong to and have come from the Commonwealth of Heaven as his representatives here on earth. You know, we even know what department of the embassy we're working in. It's the Ministry of Reconciliation, committed to us, the Ministry of Reconciliation. So, you know, in other words, in everything we do, everything we think, everything we say, be it at work, at home, whilst watching football, telling a joke, while patiently driving in a traffic jam, simply seeking to smile and offer kind eyes of kindness to a stranger we pass in the street, our basic direction of travel, our posture, our stance is as a gatherer, as a peace builder, as a reconciler. The only reason we're not physically in heaven now, Christ has called us to be ambassadors representing his kingdom on this outpost called earth. So in a world that seeks to force us to take both sides, I've decided to say, okay, I'll take sides, both sides.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for that call to be reconcilers, Alan. And I understand you distinguish between being peacemakers and peacekeepers. And there's obviously, there are peacekeepers around the place and they're good. They're doing a good job, but it's not quite the same as peacemakers.
Yes, I think if we look at it in terms of personal relationships, we could simply say that peacemakers are those who face up to conflicts and work through them. And maybe peacekeepers tend to avoid them, often through fear. But if I can throw another word in there, I think peace building is a really good word as well, especially on the world stage, you know, when we look at the macro, the big picture. To make peace almost sounds like it's something we can achieve in a day or a week, you know, whereas peace building, to build peace, somehow acknowledges that this can often be huge, complex, multifaceted, generational construction. You know, it needs to be maintained. It faces setbacks. It requires a huge investment from us all.
Alan, the idea of reconciliation involves other key terms from the New Testament, perhaps especially forgiveness. Lord's Prayer includes, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us." You're working with people of all faiths and none. Some may not want to forgive and may not be ready to forgive. So perhaps you could talk us through what you do and what your aims might be.
In the Balkans, as you say, we work with people of all faiths and none. So if an Albanian Muslim or a Croatian Catholic or a Macedonian of no faith or a Serbian Orthodox comes to Rome, however practical our sessions, they know that the forum will be modelled on the teachings of Jesus. And you've just quoted Lord's Prayer from Sermon on the Mount. And if you remember Matthew 5:23, Jesus said something else about forgiveness, really. If you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there. First, be reconciled to that person. You think, hang on a minute. They have something against me, but I'm the one who is tasked with going to seek reconciliation. Well, that is radical. So I think here we see the introduction of forgiveness and mercy as essential ingredients or prerequisites of reconciliation. And it's interesting, you know, on forgiveness, I sense there is a nervousness or reticence among international peace builders about the concept and the word forgiveness. Perhaps they would rather talk about peaceful coexistence and things like this. And I've been wondering why, and I think it's probably because forgiveness is a very robust subject, isn't it? But requires a very delicate interpretation. And I guess maybe sometimes the church has given it a bit of a bad name in the world of conflict resolution by somehow demanding forgiveness too lightly or too quickly, and also by saying some rather strange things about it. So I've taken to trying to deconstruct it a little bit. I'm not hugely into deconstruction and the whole world of it, but to deconstruct the concept of forgiveness. We talk about 10 things that it's not. So, for example, it's not pretending it never happened. It's not the same as forgetting. It's not relying on time alone to heal the pain. It's not primarily for the other person. You know, the expression forgiveness is to set a prisoner free and then to discover that the prisoner was you. Or, you know, unforgiveness is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Other things, it doesn't make the other person right. It's not the same as reconciliation. Obviously, that takes both parties. It doesn't demand an apology. It doesn't require us to invest into or to reinvest into a previously destructive relationship. All those sort of things. So forgiveness is, of course, a central theme. Central theme of what we do and what we seek to train on. But we also would talk about the nature of shalom and of servant leadership, talk through the necessity of conflict, of disagreeing well, of understanding and respecting different cultures, you know, between the guilt and innocent and honor and shame and power and fear societies. It's like that emotional well-being, servant leadership. We do group work and neurographics, if you've come across that. The whole aim is, I think you'd say shalom. It's shalom being peace with God, peace with myself, peace with those nearest and dearest and those around me, peace with society, peace with the environment, you know?
You said neurographics?
Yeah, it's a really, really simple art form. I feel quite embarrassed. I'm not an artist and I'm not a neuroscientist at all. But you can actually work through a very simple process where you express your angst on a simple bit of A4 paper, and it comes out as 8 seconds. You've got to draw a line. It can inevitably has sharp edges and overlaps. And the whole idea of neurographics is that you breathe deeply and you take time out to round off those sharp edges. And it's you can find it online, and it produces actually a really nice piece of artwork. But it's really rounding off our sharp edges. It's quite an interesting one. It's a really nice practical exercise, which can take, say, an hour and a half. And you do it together and speak into it, or just times of silence. It's one of the practical exercises.
No. Well, it's a new one on me, so thank you for exploring it.
Yeah, have a look at it. It's interesting. Very, very simple.
Yeah. Alan, as a pastor, church planter, church consultant, you'll have known the basics around reconciliation. I just wonder whether your recent work has caused you to adjust or change your perspective on the topic, and indeed what may be possible.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I'd put it more as my conviction and lifestyle rather than my work. It is what I do, but, you know, we only do what we be, don't we? So I think, you know, as I look at it, so much of the gospel that we've lived and preached for decades, you know, our restored relationship with God, our need to love one another, to forgive one another, to live in harmony or unity with one another, you know, all these things live comfortably under the heading of reconciliation, as in 2 Corinthians 5. Does it change my perspective? I guess just how massive and foundational it is, how absolutely central reconciliation is to our gospel. You know, Ephesians 2, Jesus has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility. Or Colossians 1, God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things through Christ. And I guess the perspective of just how complex and challenging it can be. So the result of that is that these days I feel I'm seeing everything through the lens of being a reconciler. You know, someone who gathers rather than someone who divides, or who builds bridges rather than walls. Even, as I said, down to catching the eye of a stranger in the street in order to express eyes of kindness.
Alan, sadly, conflict's always a feature of life. Reconciliation is often needed. Some commentators talk of the UK having more division than ever. I don't know if that's really true, but certainly social media has not generally helped. You can express a view. There's no correction of facts. The accused don't have a right to reply. And you have this kind of echo chamber. So how might a church leader prepare their congregation to be wise in the way they interact with those who don't disagree with? Because clearly this is also a feature with churches, sadly.
Yeah, with those they don't agree with, yeah. So
yeah, indeed. Well,
very practically, I'd say do something called the Difference Course. This is an excellent 5-week course, birthed from the Anglican Church, which in their own words equips you to cross divides, navigate disagreement, and pursue a just and flourishing world. We've done it in the UK and overseas, and it's just a brilliant, brilliant course, and I recommend it. I can give you the details later. But they have three repeated themes through this 5 weeks. Be curious, be present, and reimagine. You could spend a lot of time unpacking them, and obviously they do over 5 weeks. But I'd also say to church leaders, they know this already, ask questions. You know, Jesus asked 173 of them in four Gospels that we read. Who touched me? Who do you say that I am? What do you want me to do for you? You know, questions draw people out. They help them to come to their own conclusions. They hold them to account. And I think all peace builders and diplomats know the wisdom of asking questions in order to soften a lot of potential confrontation. So instead of pronouncing blame or judgment or even simple truth, you know, a question gives space, it gives respect, it invites an answer. It's less likely to generate a defensive. As well, we need to be aware of preconceptions or, I don't know, misconceptions, triggers. You know, why did I react in the way I did? Why did they react in the way they did to me? And just to give a bit of merciful space to realizing sometimes there's sort of hidden reasons behind conflict. Avoid the language of extremes, of course. You know, you never need to avoid those. And we know all these things, but I would say let's do them intentionally as the blessed peacemakers, you know, the children of God that Jesus called us and called us.
That kind of answers my next question, Alan, but you may have other things to add, because churches can be places where any deviation from the party line is jumped on. You know, obviously we want to be united around the truth and help those who are in error to understand the truth. But sometimes legitimate disagreement doesn't seem to be allowed in some church cultures. So what would you say to that?
Well, we definitely need legitimate disagreement. You know, I'd hope that the church and its leadership are mature enough or become mature enough to be stimulated by disagreement rather than threatened by it. You know, iron sharpens iron and all that. I guess it depends on which issues we see as fundamental and which we see as secondary. So let's disagree well. You know, let's listen well. Let's be open to new ideas and perspectives. And just be careful, you know, stop calling our opinions facts all the while. I think we need to be humble enough to adapt to some things and yet confident enough to resist others. And I guess the key is to know when to adapt and when to resist. Another thing, I think we need to become clear on different levels of agreement that we have with people or with groups. For example, there are many who we will merely communicate with, some who we will coordinate with, and others who we can collaborate with, and some who we can partner with, and a few who we can covenant with. You know, these are all different levels of agreement and relationship. We've been trying to work this out in my own relatively small hometown of Ipswich, where, you know, Andy, there are over 80 local churches. And this is either, you know, wonderful or utterly mad, and I've never worked out which. But through something called Together for Ipswich, I'm investing a lot of time into the one church in Ipswich. You know, we need one another. And also, if something kicks off in town, the local authority need make only one phone call and the whole Christian community can be mobilised, you know, to offer a compassionate, coordinated response. I've been thinking about this. I would say that there are three major reasons why churches stay apart. Overbusyness, theological difference, insecure leaders, you know, big fish, small sea. And I notice and I often reflect on when Barnabas went to Antioch, you know, where they did things a bit differently. And it says he saw the grace of God and was glad, not the problems or secondary theological nuances of the church, and was cautious. So, you know, let's maintain the unity of the Spirit until we attain to the unity.
Well, thank you, Alan. Lots of wisdom there. Getting a bit more personal, many church leaders have the kind of pastoral heart where any kind of conflict is hard to navigate. So the kind of wise steps that they might take to ensure that they can bring peace, even though they find it very hard?
Yeah, I think we do. Again, you know, those, I introduce myself as a man of peace and it can be to a fault sometimes. I think we need to get help with our own insecurities. It's really, really important. You know, a self-declared man of peace I might be, but I've had to come to terms with the fact that I can still become really quite stressed and anxious and fearful about facing up to confrontation. I can delay it, etc. So consequently, my leadership has sometimes been too passive. You know, I roll with the circumstances rather than taking a deep breath and speaking up for truth and justice. But, you know, also we like quick and smooth resolve, don't we? And sadly, you know, too many like to give a public image of harmony. We call it a good witness. But, you know, if things lurk under that, underneath the surface, that's not good at all. But, you know, the quick resolve, maybe we give up too early. And honestly, some conflicts are generational and some are spiritual, you know, they need prayer. One of the things, if I can go back to one of the exercises we tend to use, it's Psalm 85. It's a wonderful psalm. Verse 10 says, and you probably, I think a lot of people remember this scripture, love and faithfulness meet together. Righteousness and peace kiss each other. And in the Spanish Bible, it's translated as mercy and truth meet together. Justice and peace kiss. So we use this as a group exercise. And we ask, if these qualities, and there's four of them there, truth, mercy, justice, and peace. And we try and climb into them so that teams of people will personalize this. If mercy became a person, what would their message be for our context? If justice was, if peace, if truth was. And then what would happen if that message was ignored? And what would happen if that message dominated? And Which of the other three qualities is your best friend or ally, and why? And which of these gives you the most conflict, and why? And it's a fabulous exercise, and you can spend, you know, 90 minutes on it. So mercy, truth, justice, and peace. These things have to be held in tension, given space and respect to one another, in order for shalom to become the outcome.
Alan, time's almost defeated us, but in your reflection and thinking, have there been books or resources you found helpful?
I think I'd point back to the Difference course very simply. Difference.rln.global equips you to cross divides, navigate disagreement, pursue a just and flourishing world. And they do it for churches, small groups, youth groups, prisons, primary, secondary schools. You know, it's a fabulous course and very manageable for local churches today.
Excellent. Thank you. And how can listeners get in touch with you?
Probably my website. Cuttingacross.com. There's a contact me page. I'd be very interested to, you know, to learn further from others and to dialogue with others on this whole subject.
Thank you, Alan. Well, it's been terrific to chat with you, and I would encourage folk to listen again to our conversation, because there's so much there for us to reflect on and imbibe into our daily lives to be people of reconciliation. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Andy.
That was my conversation with Alan Cutting. As you would have gathered, he's involved in particularly in reconciliation work, formerly worked with Samaritan's Purse, Tear Fund, Grassroots Trust and others as a church and community consultant. You mentioned one resource in particular, the Difference course, difference.rln.global. And you can get in touch with Alan by going to his website, cuttingacross.com, and obviously using the contact page. So terrific to chat with him. That encouragement for all each of us to be reconcilers wherever we may be. And that may impact particularly a relationship that you have or situation. May God give you grace as you seek to tackle it, and in God's name, bring reconciliation. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
Been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity magazine.